Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Aaron Lynam on what the Bible and creation teach us about Sabbath living.
The word Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which can mean to both stop and delight. And that's what Sabbath is to my family. It's this time of stopping our regular activities and taking time to delight in what God has allowed us to do, to delight in God Himself and in our family. Because how many times we're so quick to just finish something and rush right into the next thing, check it off the list. But God gave us this pattern of, no, take an intentional pause and just enjoy and delight what God is doing in your life.
Aaron Lynam next. What can a hummingbird's flight, a jellyfish's life cycle, and a bee's waggle dance reveal about restful and flourishing life? Aaron Lynam, a certified master naturalist, author, educator, and podcast host, sits down with Sunny Kane today to discuss her new Bible study, The Nature of Rest, what the Bible and creation teach us about Sabbath living. In a world that prizes hustle, constant productivity, and self-help strategies, Aaron explores the deep roots of rest found in Scripture and the outdoors to help people unearth attainable rest and find pathways out of hurry and exhaustion for peace and purpose in their everyday life.
Well, hi, Aaron. I want to welcome you to His People. We're so glad you're here with us today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So you are the host of a top-rated children's podcast, Nat Theo, Nature Lessons Rooted in the Bible. And I really love how your passion for both nature and kids, it shines through your work. I mean, before we hit record, we were talking about how you can even see this on your social media. Well, I would love for our listeners to be able to hear a little bit about you and maybe the heartbeat behind your work.
Thank you. So I work as a certified master naturalist, and that's kind of a fancy term for nature teacher. And I pursued this training several years ago because as my own family began spending more time outdoors, I have four kids. So I've been married to my husband for 16 years now, and our boys are 14, 12, and 10, and our daughter's 7. And as we just started spending more time outdoors, I began to see, okay, God has given us so many incredible materials in creation that we can use to teach biblical truth. And that's my degree and my passion is in theology. And so I wanted to better understand all of these creatures and plants and ecosystems so that I could use those visuals to really teach theology to kids in a way that they can understand and grasp. And think about, like, this is how Jesus taught in the Gospels, using sand and wildflowers and sparrows, all of these things that people can remember and really root and anchor truth in. And so that's the heartbeat behind my books and our podcast. It's been so fun just to see the response from families as we dive into God's designs, going deep into science, but in a way that kids can understand, and then always tying it back to biblical truth.
It's beautiful. And my friend, if you are listening right now, you have got to go check out her social media and listen into her podcast. That was the Nat Theo Nature Lessons Rooted in the Bible. But we're here to talk today about your brand new Bible study, which is geared towards adults. And this is The Nature of Rest. And it tackles something our culture desperately needs. Can you share the backstory on what prompted you to write this right now?
So as I was working as a naturalist and I'm seeing all these connections between scripture and creation, at the same time, about 3.5 years ago, our family came up against this wall. We were exhausted. I know so many of your listeners are probably in the same place right now. My husband and I, we were both running businesses and we're homeschooling our four kids. But really, no matter your situation, we are all busy. We are all tired. If your schedule is not busy, then probably your mind is busy. Like we have so many things going on, and that's where we were at. And we came to a place where rest was no longer optional. We began to see it as vital and critical. And so I went and I looked at both creation and scripture to see what do both of these revelations from God say about rest. And what I found is that rest is everywhere in both nature and scripture. Like, rest is not a footnote in scripture. It's not just mentioned here and there a few places. It is from cover to cover. And the same in creation. God designed all of his plants and creatures to thrive through rhythms of rest, and that really supports all of the work that they do. So why would we be any different? And so that was the concept of the book, to really, okay, invite readers to dive in deep, both into scripture. It's an interactive Bible study where you're even looking at like the Greek and the Hebrew behind these concepts of rest, and then how to apply them. Like, how do we actually make these rhythms a part of our life in modern society? And then where do we see rest in creation, so that every time we step outside, we're reminded, oh, this is how God meant for me to live and work and thrive.
Now, I know from just, you know, looking through your book a little bit, I have not finished it, but I do intend to. It's a really great Bible study. But as you look at those places in creation that you just mentioned, one of the places that you open your book is that with, you were looking at a hummingbird. Can you kind of talk us through that, of what did you learn about rest from the hummingbird?
Well, you don't often think about hummingbirds when you think about rest. What do you picture when you think of a hummingbird?
Immediately I go, they are so fast. Like, you can't even see their wings because they are moving so quickly.
Completely. It was so fun. My family was up in the mountains just a few days ago, and there were these flowering bushes and these hummingbirds just zipping and zooming. I thought they were going to hit us. Like, they are just flying everywhere around us, and then they would hover by a flower to get the nectar. And you're right, you can't even see their wings. It's a blur of motion. Their little wings flap up to 70 times every second. And so these birds are this picture of constant motion. And yet what sustains them is a beautiful strategy of rest called torpor. And torpor, it's kind of like a mini hibernation, where the bird is going to go into a deeply restful state. It will lower its body temperature by up to 50 degrees, and it becomes completely unresponsive. When people have found them in torpor before, they've thought that they're deceased because they're so unresponsive. Or if a hummingbird is clinging to, say, a branch or a bird feeder, and it goes into torpor, sometimes they'll actually flip upside down, and they're still clinging because of how their feet are designed, but they don't know they're hanging upside down because they're so deep at rest. And so it's this regular, rhythmic, deep rest that sustains the hummingbird and all of the fruitful work that it's doing. And the same is true for us. God designed us for fruitful work. Both work and rest came before the fall, before sin. And so the hummingbird is this reminder, yes, God means for us to be busy with the right things and do fruitful work, but all of that needs to be supported and sustained by regular, rhythmic, intentional rest.
It's funny, you have me curious now that I'm thinking this torpor. First, I thought, well, my husband always plays dead. That must be kind of what it looks like, you know, when you are seeing these birds in this. But where are they? You said they often, you could see them on a branch, or do they, I mean, where often do they rest?
It's funny that you ask that. I've never been able to find one in torpor. I actually had a dream the other night where I found one. So it's funny that you asked that. But yeah, hummingbirds are like other birds. They need to roost in order to rest. And so they're going to land in a tree. And you can often see hummingbirds. I saw one yesterday. I was out running with my kids, and we saw a hummingbird perched on top of a tree. So even hummingbirds are going to perch often. And then when they need to go into this deep rest, they're going to do that wherever they're roosting.
It's almost like it's a bird with narcolepsy is what it would look like. Yes. If you're right. And I've got some friends that have that. I'm going to tell them this story.
Oh, that's funny.
So can you share one or two of your favorite examples from nature, like the hummingbird, where you see God is using that to show us patterns of rest?
Well, let's talk about bees, because, you know, you often think about busy bees, and bees, they have so many different jobs even throughout their life. They change jobs every few days in the hive. And so it's this incredible design of the hive working together. But the forager bees, who are in charge of going out and finding nectar and pollen from flowers, when they come back to the hive, they have to somehow communicate to their hive mates where the flowers are that they have found. And they do this with a movement called the waggle dance. Isn't that just such a funny, like, where in science do you hear of something like the waggle dance?
Yeah, it just sounds fun, and, right? Like, I want to do it.
Totally. And it's this intricate figure eight flight pattern that they do. And scientists believe that it communicates to the other bees three things about the flowers. First, what direction the nectar is in. Second, how far away the nectar is. And third, even the quality of the flower patch that they have found. And so think about all those details. This has to be a very intricate movement to communicate all those things. And a bee cannot perform that correctly if it's not rested, if it's, like we would say, suffering burnout, if it's been working too hard. So even busy bees rely on regular rhythmic rest in order to be able to communicate and do the work that God designed them for.
Wow. Imagine all of the thoughts I think of a busy mother and what it takes for us to keep our home in order. And yet, we know, as we're listening, we might be going, okay, hummingbirds rest, bees rest, but it's hard for me to rest. And I do want to help us get to the practical in a moment, but these are so fun hearing you talk about, you know, the bees and the hummingbirds. Is there one more that you could share with us where we see these patterns illustrated?
Yeah, let's go into plants, because plants also rely on rhythms of rest. And one that I often think about are perennial plants, so plants that come back year after year. And a few years ago, our family planted perennial gardens, pollinating plants in our yard. And I needed an easy button to make this happen. I'm not much of a gardener, and so I ordered these little garden-in-a-box kits where you get the baby plants. And when they arrived, I had all these doubts because they looked like weeds. Like, they're just little clumps of leaves, and I didn't know if it was going to turn into anything. But we faithfully put them in the ground and watered them. And by the end of that first season, there were some buds and blossoms. And I was surprised by this, but I also, going into fall as everything's shriveling up, I'm thinking, I don't know if these are going to come back in the spring. But sure enough, come spring, as the ground thawed, we saw fresh little green shoots shooting up from the earth. And by the end of that second growing season, some of these plants were almost 3 feet tall and just bursting with buds and blossoms and bees and butterflies all around. And the secret to a perennial plant like this, how they come back stronger, more beautiful, more fruitful every year, is through seasonal pauses for rest, where during the winter, when everything looks dead, the roots of those plants are strengthening underground, and they need that time. So the same is true for us, that we need to have these regular rhythms of rest so that our roots can strengthen.
So let's go into that. In your study, you write about returning to God's original pattern of rest and work. What do you feel like that looks like, and how does it differ from how most of us are living today?
Yeah, we have these beautiful patterns of rest in scripture. And what I began to see is that rest is hinted at during creation, established in the wilderness with Sabbath with the Israelites, and then it's modeled through the life of Christ and fulfilled at Calvary. So let's look at God's original pattern at creation. Of course, we know God worked for 6 days and then rested on the seventh. But think about Adam. He was created on the sixth day. So Adam's first full day was a day devoted to rest. And I think that's beautiful because it shows that we were always meant to begin from rest. So many times we work and work and work thinking, okay, maybe I'll be able to rest this weekend or on vacation or in retirement or when the kids are grown. No, God always meant for rest to be this powerful strategy that we start from. And it's so beautiful looking at the creation narrative, because we can even ask, okay, why did God rest? Isaiah says he doesn't grow weary or tired, but I believe it was to set that pattern for us because he knew we would need rest, and also because he wanted to stop and delight in everything he had just made. The word Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which can mean to both stop and delight. And that's what Sabbath is to my family. It's this time of stopping our regular activities and taking time to delight in what God has allowed us to do, to delight in God himself and in our family. Because how many times we're so quick to just finish something and rush right into the next thing, check it off the list. But God gave us this pattern of, no, take an intentional pause and just enjoy and delight what God is doing in your life.
I love the shift there, working from rest instead of for rest. And I would love for you to just dig a little bit deeper in that forest. What would it look like if, even just in your family, of that paradigm of we work from rest? What's different as a result of that?
This has changed so much in our family, in our faith, in our work, because when we started celebrating Sabbath about 3.5 years ago, I had all these major doubts because we chose to go the biblical model and do a full day of rest. And so I'm thinking, okay, how are we going to get all the things done with one less day a week? But very quickly, as we took this step of faith, we became more creative, more productive, more fruitful, more effective. Our businesses grew. Our family has been closer. It is incredible because I believe Sabbath and rest are always a step of faith. Think about the Israelites in Exodus 16 when we get the first mention of Sabbath. God called them to not gather on that seventh day, to rest. And he said, it is a holy Sabbath set apart to the Lord. That's the first mention of Sabbath. And so they had very little context for what God was calling them to do. I have to imagine that was scary to not go out and gather. And the same is true for us. We are so prone to gather, produce, do. We feel like we are the ultimate providers. But Sabbath is trusting God as our ultimate provider and taking his invitation to step into rest. And as my family has done that, we have seen so much growth in every area of our lives.
What would a typical Sabbath day in your family look like? Help us kind of peek inside of that.
That's a great question. And I always tell people, you know, it's going to look different home to home and family to family. It's unique to your situation and even your season. Our Sabbath has changed over time. But right now, what it normally looks like is we Sabbath for the most part from Friday evening to Saturday evening. We love that model because it's, you know, you're wrapping up the week and we start Friday evening with communion together as a family and just celebrating what Christ has done for us. And then we'll pour sparkling juice and we'll toast to what we saw God do that week. Hey, what was the best part of your week? What was something hard that you overcame? How did you see God at work? And so that's that idea of stop and delight. We're delighting in what God did that week. And then after the kids go to bed, and audiobooks are huge for this. Like if you're concerned, okay, my kid's not going to be on board with putting away screens, audiobooks have been huge for this. So the kids will listen to an audiobook and eventually fall asleep. And this is when my husband and I read books. Like people ask me, when do you have time to read? You don't find time, you make time. And that's what Sabbath is. Saturday, we sleep in. And again, that's going to look different. If you have a newborn at home, it's just going to be different and that's okay. But we will either... Everyone kind of gets their own breakfast, or sometimes we'll do a big fun brunch together. And then it is a day just set aside to delight. And that might be hard for some people because a lot of us have forgotten what we delight in. And a lot of this is coming back to what refreshes me, what's inspiring, what draws my heart to God. That might be painting or listening to or making music or reading a good book or walking in creation or even working out in the garden if that's refreshing to you, or cooking with fresh ingredients if you don't get to do that during the week. It's all these things that throughout the week we think, oh, I would love to do that. I would love to get to that. And then it doesn't happen. Sabbath is a built-in time for those refreshing activities that truly bring rest to our minds, bodies, and souls.
I loved the way you even just framed that around the things that our hearts might be taking delight in, because I think you're right. I think that we sometimes will view Sabbath as a time of idleness, right? Doing nothing. And yet you're inviting us into something very different. So let's say somebody is hearing you and you've given them permission that this could look very different than what your Sabbath looks like. Are there some key questions that we might ask ourselves? And maybe there's not, but some key things that we could look for in designing our own Sabbath and finding what
absolutely
would be good for us.
Yeah, I encourage people to do two things. First, set aside a day and time. It might not be a full day at first. If that's a huge barrier and you're thinking, there's no way I can do this, find 4 hours during the week, even if it's a weekday afternoon, and protect that time fiercely. And then secondly, write two lists, your stop list and your delight list. So your stop list is everything that feels heavy, everything that causes you to go into rush or hustle or hurry mode. So that might be any regular work. It's probably screens, media, notifications. It might be spending money or driving in traffic. Write down those things that you're going to set aside for that time. And then write down the things that you delight in. Again, reading a good book, journaling by hand, doing a creative project, being out in creation. So now you have your day and time. You know what you're not going to do, and you know what you're going to do. And, you know, this has just been key for my family. And again, it's changed over time. Like our first full year, we wanted to learn to stay. So we didn't get into the car on Sabbath for a whole year. We stayed home. And this was so sweet because we just learned to enjoy being home together. And we had so much time visiting with neighbors. And then after that first year, we realized we were really missing our time in the mountains. And so we built in, okay, toward the end of Sabbath on Saturday, let's go on a hike or let's go have a picnic in the mountains to wrap up Sabbath. And so just allowing for that flexibility and that grace, because God always meant for Sabbath to be a gift to us and not a burden.
You also, in your book, I know we've been talking about Sabbath, but you also go into this, what you call the rest pause. And you're looking at the word Selah. For those who might be unfamiliar with that term, what does this mean? And is this, these little Selah pauses, is that different than Sabbath?
They are different. This is more of a daily rhythm of rest because, yes, Sabbath is, I believe, critical. That's a weekly rhythm, but we can also have daily rhythms of rest, seasonal rhythms. And so we look at the word Selah from the Psalms, and Bible scholars are a bit torn on what it actually means, but it seems to be either liturgical or musical or literary, and it's an intentional pause, often to reflect and even redirect if needed. And so we can do this throughout our day. Insert these intentional pauses. They might be 2 minutes, they might be 10 minutes, they might be a half hour. Because again, we are so prone to just pack a day full, like a game of Tetris, filling every little spot. We need to build in these pauses so we have time to hear from God, to reflect on maybe the conversation that we just had, to prepare before we go into the next thing. And so for me, a lot of times these are walks outside, or if you have 5 minutes, just go stand outside in the sunshine. And just to allow your mind to rest, you can do some practical things too. One of my favorite ways to do this is to recite Psalm 23, whether out loud or just in my mind, and it only takes a couple minutes. But think about Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I take that phrase, I shall not want, and I add it to the end of every stanza. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, I shall not want. He leads me beside still, quiet, that word means restful, waters, I shall not want. Mm. By repeating this phrase, I shall not want, it takes us out of a place of discontent or distraction, because discontent and distraction, say from social media, send us into hurry and hustle. So it removes us from that place and places us back into a place of contentment and trusting God as our provider. So these little pauses throughout the day that can just keep you focused and keep you, protect you from hurry and hustle.
That is so funny because I have been reading Psalm 23 every day this week, or I have been listening to it just, you know, on YouVersion, listening to it while I drive. Mm-hmm. And what has happened as a result of that is I actually feel more rested simply from taking those quick moments of rest to listen and tune into scripture. So I love what you're saying. And that's a very practical way that whether you're a busy mom or whether you are a busy, you know, you've got a business that you're running, no matter what, we all can take a quick few moments to give ourselves that gift. Now, what about the person? I keep holding my daughter in mind as you are talking today. And she walked with chronic illness for a very long time and felt almost like her whole life was paused and like rest was all that she did. And I'm aware in today's world, there are so many autoimmune conditions where a person might really feel like they're perpetually paused. It's a constant pause button. And I know you are not far removed from this. I read that you had Addison's disease and you were diagnosed with that at age 14. I'd just love to hear you speak to people in our audience that might be in that place and what they could learn about rest.
Yeah. At age 14, I was diagnosed with Addison's disease, which, yes, it's an autoimmune disorder. And it is where your adrenal glands no longer function. So mine have not functioned for over 20 years now. And barring a miracle, they won't until the new creation. But your adrenal glands, of course, they produce adrenaline, but they also produce key hormones, including cortisol. And that's your stress hormone. God knew that we were going to live and operate in this world broken by sin with a whole lot of stress. So he gave us this system, these glands to produce cortisol, and that's your fight or flight response. That's what helps your body cope with stress. And so at age 14, when my body became unable to do that, stress became fatal to me. And so I can see that long before my family even stepped into Sabbath, God was bringing me into this restful lifestyle out of necessity. But the thing is, you know, even if you don't have a condition like Addison's disease, God never meant our bodies to operate at the pace of society, at this go, hurry, hustle. Because while Addison's disease is very rare, many people have adrenal fatigue, where their body is so taxed out by the pace of life, by the stress of life, that it's no longer operating how God meant it to. And so much of this is learning to operate, getting back even to our circadian rhythm and that natural wake, work, rest cycle that God built into us. And so while my diagnosis has been hard and I live with this every day, it's also been a sweet thing that allows me to more experience and more appreciate God's gift of rest. And to speak to the pause, because I know so many people, yes, just feel like their whole life is rest or waiting. Like, when can I get better? When can I do the work? We spent a whole week in the study on the idea of waiting, because waiting we often see as idle. Like, oh, nothing's happening. This is frustrating. It feels like an itchy sweater. Like, when can I take off this season of waiting? But waiting is also God's invitation, because you think about the Apostle Paul. After he was radically transformed, after God revealed himself to Paul, you can imagine, like, Paul's life has totally been changed. And you can imagine he'd be so excited to go and share this message and tell everyone what had happened. But that's not what we see. We see that he went away for 3 years before beginning his ministry. And scholars believe that time was spent in prayer and studying the scriptures and preparation. And so even if you're in a season of waiting, don't be frustrated. Don't feel like it's just idle. No, ask God, what are you preparing me for? How are you developing me, growing me, and preparing me for the work that you have created me for?
And that changes everything. What you look for in a season will be the determining factor of how you get through that season. And oftentimes we've got our mind in the wrong spot, focusing on the itchy sweater, to use your words. But being able to look at God and knowing that he is always working for our good. Erin, that's a great reminder for people that I know. We all wrestle. Whether we're paused from autoimmune or we're paused because our normal got hijacked from something, we all wait. And so our perspective in that matters. Now, I know that you work closely with children through your podcast, and we're nearing the end of our time here, but I couldn't help but ask you a question on knowing you do so much with children. What do you wish adults would notice or learn from kids when it comes to rest, wonder, or living with a sense of rhythm?
I think children are closer to this than we are. You know, we grow up and we have so much on our plates and agendas. And yes, so much of it is the God-given work that we need to do, the responsibilities he has entrusted us with. But kids are so attuned to the need to slow down and pause. And sadly, a lot of kids are not allowed to do that because of the busyness of society. But one thing I love seeing in my kids, and I know this isn't for everyone, but we have chosen to homeschool our kids. And one reason is, and whether you homeschool or choose a specific education method, allowing them to operate within those rhythms, not stealing those, not packing a schedule so tight. Like, my kids love nothing more when we finish a lesson than to go run around outside. Or my older kids now, they love just sitting on the back deck or climbing up in their treehouse and watching birds. Like, they told me the other day, they're like, we're up in the treehouse and a hummingbird landed right next to our head. Like, those are monumental experiences. And so I think if we allow kids to operate at the pace that they were created for. And then we just watch their delight and how good it is for them. I think we learn something from that. My kids are the quickest ones when I'm working too much, when I have too much on my plate, to invite me, hey, will you come sit with me? Will you go on a walk with me? And it's hard for me to say yes to that when I'm in work and productivity mode. But I see that as an invitation that, you know, they're right. They're inviting me to do this very thing that is life-giving and ultimately will benefit all the work that I'm doing.
Well, in closing today, what is one thing that you hope readers take away from the nature of rest?
My prayer is that they will take a risk on rest. I'm very aware that this message and even this book, although it's written in a gentle, engaging, inviting way, this is a hard concept because it's so countercultural. So think back again to the Israelites when God challenged them to do something they had very little context for. We have very little context in this society for rest. Trust God, take that risk, that step of faith, and just know that His design works.
Isn't that the truth? Well, to those listening, if you are ready to step out of the rush and rediscover God's gift of rest, I encourage you to check out Erin Lynam's Bible study, The Nature of Rest, available anywhere you pick up books, as well as at erinlynam.com. And Erin, we want to thank you so much for the gift of your time today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Jeff Zwierink on how to think about natural disasters as a Christian.
There are trees that only germinate and plant, and their seed, their pine cones only open in the heat of a fire. It will never happen otherwise. It's like God has designed that part of nature to work in the midst of fire and made a way of recovering, and there's a robustness to it even in the midst of the fire. So is the fire evil? Well, no, it's part of the way creation works. In fact, there are aspects of creation that don't happen if the fire doesn't happen.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.